This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's Friday, July 5th, 2019, and we are live. You know what that means, right? That you can actually call and talk to me and my guest, join the discussion, ask us a question, give us a comment. It's easy to do. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. And if you're not listening live, that's cool. Would love to still hear your sex and relationship advice questions, your comments on the show. That can be done 24 hours a day at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. So I have a returning guest tonight on the show. So we've heard him once before, but since then he's building a little empire for himself. He's so busy. I don't even know. He's like better at social media than I am. I don't even know how he finds the time. Let me tell you who it is. It's Andrew Gerza, who is an award-winning disability awareness consultant and cripple content creator, whose written work has been featured on CBC, Daily Extra, The Gay Times UK, Huffington Post, The Advocate, Everyday Feminism, Mashable, Out.com, and several anthologies. He was the subject of an award-winning National Film Board of Canada documentary called Picture This. He's guested on a number of podcasts, including Dan Savage's and Cameron Esposito's. He's spoken all over the world about sex, disability, and what it means to be a queer cripple. He's also the host of his own podcast, Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on sex and disability, which was nominated for a Canadian Podcast Award this year. He's the creator of the viral hashtag disabled people are hot. You can type that in now and see all the action. You can find out more about him on his website, andrewgerza.com. He's also the Andrew Gerza on social media. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Andrew.
Tristan, thank you for having me again. I'm so excited to be here.
You know, you've been doing a lot of stuff. I feel like we have years to catch up on, kind of.
We do. Yeah, we really do. We really do.
I don't want to jump right in and make people feel like they're not in the know or that we're using jargony language. And so I like to do some simple stuff first.
Sure.
And I guess I want to start with talking about reclaiming language and the fact that you identify yourself as a queer cripple. And some people would think of one or both of those words as being derogatory.
Yeah, and they were, and they are derogatory, depending on how they're used. But in my view, I know they're derogatory, and I know they can be used in a derogatory sense, but I am reclaiming them for myself. I wouldn't go around to other disabled people and be like, hey, cripple, what's up? Like, that's not how I would do things. But it's language for me, and I enjoy a bit of my brand is a bit of the shock and awe value of disability, and I enjoy making people like sit up and take notice of what I'm doing with that language. And once they realize that I'm using it to actually incite change in the way we talk about disability, they actually see it as a really positive identifier.
Yeah, and it's part of a larger community. I mean, there are people who write about Crip theory and Crip culture and Crip communities. So it has been reclaimed by a bunch of folks. I just wanted listeners to kind of know that, because I do believe in the world of sex, which I'm deeply entrenched in and have been for 2 decades, that talking about sex and disability is one of the things we haven't done enough of, we aren't good at, and is something that, quite frankly, makes people uncomfortable.
Yep. All those things are true. We're not doing enough of it. We're still in the dark ages of talking about sex and disability, where it's like, oh, you're disabled? You have sex? Wow. We're still there in 2019. So we have a lot of work to do. And I mean, I'm only one voice of a community of people who want these things and want these discussions to happen. But I'm very excited by what I'm able to help bring forward with my conversations.
This is your mission. I mean, this is really such a huge part of what you do. Why is it important to talk about the sexual identities and the sexual experiences of disabled folks?
I think it's important because disability is so distilled oftentimes into just disability and your impairment and what your disability is. So because I'm a wheelchair user, people will look at me and say, oh, your life as a wheelchair user is so hard. Oh, goodness. Wow. It's so tough. Being disabled is so tough for you because of that. And we don't talk about the fact that, yes, I'm a wheelchair user, but I also like to have sex, and I also like to be naked, and I also like to be, I'm queer, and we don't talk about those things. So bringing sexuality into the disabled sphere is so important because it shows people that disabled people can be nuanced. We can be more than our disabilities, but I believe that we can be a lot because of our disabilities, my work is never to overcome my disability. My work is to sit within my disability and try to find how all the other parts of my life connect to my disabled identity. And so talking about sex is one part of my disabled identity, and there are other parts of my disabled identity that don't involve sex. But I love talking about sex because it makes people sit up and take notice of the other issues around disability. When you start with like, hey, I like to have sex and I'm disabled today, people then all of a sudden are like, wow, that was a conversation starter. Let's talk about this.
No, it really is. And I think disabled folks have been, well, it's like they're desexualized. They're often infantilized, right? You know, and have you ever seen someone talk to a disabled person like they also are a slow learner, or like they're a child, but they're fully grown adults? I feel like because of that, we as a culture tend to just erase the possibility that people who are disabled are also sexual.
Yeah. I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that we're afraid to admit that one day all of us, whether we're able-bodied right now or not, disability and old age is coming for us, whether we want to admit it or not. And that terrifies us to our core. So so when you see somebody with a disability who's already using a mobility device at like in their mid-20s or early 30s, that scares the average person into like, oh no, I have to look at my own life now, and it's terrifying. And I think that if you would just sit and listen to disabled people, they can give you a lot of pointers for your own life to make it better now, so that when disability does become a part of your life, you don't have to be afraid of it.
Well, yeah, and you don't have to. I mean, I think this idea that people feel sorry for disabled people really annoys disabled people. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I jokingly say, look, if you feel sorry for me, what can I get out of that? Like, if you're feeling so sorry for me, well, can you buy me a thing? Can I get something out of you? If you're gonna think that my whole life is pitiable, I'm going to use that to my advantage. I say that jokingly, but like, yeah, it's unfortunate that people think that we sit in our rooms and cry about disability all day. Now, there are moments in my disabled day that I definitely am like, oh crap, disability stuff's happening today. That doesn't feel so great, for sure. But I'm not sitting here bemoaning the fact that I'm disabled every hour of the day. I am using my disability to create change in the community, and that's really cool. Like, I'm very proud of my disabled identity for giving me that opportunity.
And do you feel like there are different experiences even among disabled people, because there's so many different ways that you can be and identify as disabled? That also feels like, it feels like we're, when we say like disabled community, it's like one amorphous thing when there's so many different life experiences in there.
Yeah.
There's people who've been disabled from birth and people who have not, which has to be a difference. And everyone has a different disability.
Yeah, and that's the first one is being congenitally disabled, which is being born from birth like I was with cerebral palsy, and then people who acquire their disability. There's a huge difference between somebody who acquires their disability and somebody who is born with their disability. And I'm not saying the two communities can't work together, but they're definitely not the same community. And I think it's unfortunate in a lot of the media we see the only way to be disabled is if you had an accident. The only way to be disabled is if you become a disabled person via some tragic event. That's why a lot of people born with disabilities will have people on the street walk up to them and say, "Oh no, what happened to you?" And the person's like, "I got up today. I'm just living my day. What happened to you?"
It was just the same as yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that discussion needs to be had, that there are people who were born into disability, quite literally born with their disability, and it is a part of our DNA, and it is a part of who we are, and that's something that isn't always fantastic. I'm not saying like, yeah, being disabled is great every day, but it's something that we need to talk about when we talk about disabled communities. Just like with the LGBTQ community, we say community all the time, when what we really mean is communities, because there are so many different levels of queerness and of disability in these communities, and we need to talk about them both.
Okay, we got to take our first commercial break. Let's hear from our sponsors, including the Amazing Pleasure Test, which makes the show possible. And when we come back, we're going to talk about disability justice. We're going to talk about hashtag disabled people are hot, and more about Andrew's work. So stay with us. It's July, which means it is the one and only sale of the year at the Pleasure Chest, in store and online. It's BOGO. Buy one, get one half off anything that vibrates of equal or lesser value. Have your eye on a luxury vibe. These things do not go on sale, people. Maybe you want to try a vibrating butt plug. Maybe your magic wand is about to kind of kick it. Not to worry. BOGO is the perfect time to restock or upgrade your toolbox. You need to invest in pleasure for yourself, for a lover, for a friend, for a partner, or really just to treat yourself. This sale goes on for the entire month of July. It excludes Crave and Pleasure Chest kits. It's not available to combine with any other offers or promotions. Visit pleasurechest.com and get your vibe on.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico, at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javi and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swingset is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way! I can go there and come there too? There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I am talking today with disability justice coordinator and consultant and expert and social media giant, Andrew Gerza. Andrew, before the break, you mentioned you were doing an analogy between disability communities as plural and queer communities as plural. I find that there is more talk of accessibility in the queer communities in which I operate rather than kind of the world at large in general. Do you think that? Do you think queers are a little bit more on top of it?
I'm curious to know what queer communities you operate in.
Well, I guess they intersect with social justice stuff. So that may be part of why. Like, I just got two emails. One was about a conference I'm attending in July, and there was an entire section on disability. And then I just got an email about this leather contest, a queer leather contest, like at the local leather bar. And they also went through all of these disability things, including, for example, what kind of chair I wanted to sit in.
Wow.
And I was like, I am fucking here for this, people.
Wow. I've never gotten emails like that.
Because I can't sit just for me. They didn't send it to me. It was a group email. But for me, I can't sit on a backless chair or a stool, like at all, in any circumstance.
Okay.
Right. So I was like, oh, you know, so it was like they were talking about like, here's what's wheelchair accessible. Here's the bathroom situation. Here's this. And then they were like, oh, and this is the seating. And if you need different seating, tell us. And I was like, oh, so I generally, I don't know. I feel like lately people have been getting better, but not great.
I feel like queer femme communities are starting to get that unlock. I feel like queer male to male, mask for mask, like gonna go to the club and go dance on a box communities, unfortunately, are not so much into the accessibility thing quite yet. So yeah, I think different queer communities pay different attention.
Yeah, but maybe not the boys.
Yeah, I mean, that could be my own personal experience coloring it. I mean, I asked to go to a Halloween party probably last Halloween, and I phoned the club and I said, I really want to come to this party. I'm excited. Can I come? And the organizer said, could you just bring another wheelchair that night?
A what? Another?
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, what makes you think I have another? And I felt like saying back to him, can you bring in other legs that night? Can you just bring other legs that night? Is that okay for you? So I just feel like they don't, because in my experience, and I'm only speaking for myself, queer men are so sexualized constantly with the ability to have certain kinds of sex that they don't consider disability at all.
Mm.
And that could be in part misogyny. That could be in part like that could be a lot of.
Well, there's some body fascism. I mean, immediately what comes to mind is that there are whole swaths of the gay community who are really obsessed with bodies and with bodies looking very particular ways and showing off these said bodies on these hookup apps. And so I think part of it is that they can't imagine bodies other than this one standard everyone's sort of held up.
Yeah, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think also it in part speaks to the gay male community, particularly when they see somebody with a disability who's in a wheelchair because of the AIDS epidemic years ago, they may you know, remember what it was like then, or think, oh, this person is sick because they're in a wheelchair. And so their first thought, maybe he's sick, maybe he has HIV, maybe he's got AIDS. This has not been confirmed to me by anybody, but this is something that when I see the way they look at me, I think, you really think that I'm sick, don't you? And if I was able-bodied with all the muscles and all the things, you would maybe talk to me.
This is a fascinating piece, and this could be also generational, but yes, the idea that the last time I saw someone in my community in a wheelchair, it was for this reason. And I saw a lot of people in wheelchairs. And then I saw a lot of people die, you know, which is this collective trauma that gay men have experienced and continue to experience to some extent. But we've changed the way, you know, we've had all these advances in medicine and treatment. That is a really interesting insight, that there's this association and this wanting to sort of turn away from that, right?
And it's just something that I've been thinking about the more and more, because we see it a lot right now in gay male communities, where like there'll be the AIDS life cycle bike thing, and a lot of the like really muscular dudes will go on Twitter and be like, help me promote my ride to this place for AIDS, which is great and fantastic, and I support that. But also, part of me, I tweeted a few weeks ago, part of me was like, I really wish that all these guys supporting AIDS life cycle would also support accessibility for disabled queers who maybe don't have HIV and are just wheelchair users and want to get in the club. Mm-hmm. I wish that sense of like, let me put money down towards this would also extend to disabled gay men who just want to be a part of the community.
Yeah. I mean, this begs the question, kind of, how do you navigate your dating life? Although I sort of know, because you're super open on the social media. You are unabashed. You are shameless in all the best ways. I mean, only you could sort of come up with this hashtag, disabled people are hot, and have it kind of catch fire. It's so provocative. It's simple words put together, but it's so stunning and provocative for what it communicates and how it really challenges and kind of flips the script on what we're taught to think about disabled people. I also saw you on Twitter recently say, why am I hot? What do you think my hotness comes from? Or something. There was like some Twitter poll. I actually answered it. And the choices were like, my smile, my activism. What were the other ones? My brain? Your sense of humor. It was very, very funny. I don't know that I could like open myself up to that sort of criticism, but I feel like you're doing it for a reason. Like this stuff that you share, which is so personal, including your sexual experiences with sex workers, which is incredibly stigmatized. Talk about putting like two major stigmas together. Well, and also you're queer, so maybe that's three stigmas. There's the whole intersectional thing going on here. But, you know, I think what you're talking about is some of the most highly stigmatized things that there are. And at some point, do you feel like, oh my God, I've revealed too much?
No, because I have nothing. Like, this is not to say that I don't feel shame and I don't have moments where I feel ashamed, but talking about working with sex workers and showing disabled people that they can have agency in their sex lives if they have the financial means to work with somebody. And I also understand the privilege of that. The privilege of being able to have enough money to hire a sex worker. Mm-hmm. Some of us can't. So I'm very lucky and privileged in that regard. But I think we need to talk about it, because it wasn't a decision that I came to lightly. I didn't just hop on a site one day and be like, I'm going to pick that one. I bemoaned over like, should I spend this money on this right now? Or should I, you know, save up and buy groceries for the next week? Like, that's literally the conversation I have with myself. And then I was like, you know what? I'll figure it out. But this is something that I need, because I wasn't having sex. I wasn't happy. I wasn't going on dates. I wasn't meeting people the conventional queer ways, which is like on the apps and all those things. That wasn't happening. And I was like, I want the sex that everybody else is having. And if I have to cultivate it myself, that's what I'll do.
Which is, by the way, something that plenty of other people do, regardless of their ability or disability. But no one talks about it, of course, right?
Yeah.
And do you have to sort of vet a sex worker in advance and say, I'm disabled, like, I don't want you to come here and give me some bullshit about it?
I did a lot of vetting, and I've also been in situations where I didn't properly vet because I was like, oh, you're hot, come over. Yeah, great.
And We all have those moments, Andrew. Yeah. We all have those moments.
I had a moment of weakness, and I was like, you're attractive, come over. And I was like, oh, that was a mistake. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. So, but I will vet them and say, have you ever worked with a disabled client before? And honestly, true fact, I get more turned on when they say no because I think, ooh, I get to teach you this.
Oh my God, I love this.
Like, I get so aroused, and not just sexually, like, just intellectually. Like, I get to show you this. Like, I'm your very first disabled person. There's something really special about that, and I take that responsibility and that opportunity very seriously because I'm like, I get to show them what being severely disabled, which is what the medical community would term me as, severely disabled and hot as fuck as is. So, I mean, I think that's really powerful, and I loved it doing that. But I do have to vet them, and I do have to make sure they're comfortable, and I do have to make sure they're okay, and they, you know, make sure I'm okay. And I work with two specifically right now, one that I've seen for almost 2 years and one that I've seen for a few months. And those relationships to me are really powerful. They're powerful because we're not dating, we're not boyfriends, we're not coupled up or anything, but it is a regular relationship with somebody.
It's intimate and ongoing.
Yeah. And so it feels like, it's so funny because I just 20 minutes ago texted my longtime sex worker and said, oh my goodness, in 3 months, it'll be 2 years. Like, I want to go out for dinner with you and do something about that to celebrate that with you. That's important to me. Let's celebrate that. And that felt kind of nice because it also means that for 2 years, I decided, fuck all your conventional stuff. I'm going to do this for me.
Mm. I love that. Because I also think there's so many lessons here also about sex work that people can learn, which is to be open about it, to be honest, to negotiate for what you want, and again, to just release the stigma of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the stigma, and that's the hardest part. Like the thing that changed that for me was telling my mom that I work with sex workers, telling her that I work with sex workers. We're on the phone one day, a few months ago now, and I've talked to other outlets about this, but we're on the phone one day and I hadn't been telling her for years and I've been kind of hiding it and not telling her the truth. She'd say like, what are you doing tonight? And I'd be like, oh, I'm going on a date with a boy. Meanwhile, I've just spent money like to invite somebody over. And so one day I just said, oh, mom, I got to tell you that I work with sex workers. And I was waiting for her to be so angry and to like admonish me and say that this is a problem and ask me all the like, oh no, is it a dangerous thing you're doing? And she paused and went, oh, cool. If I ever needed one, I would do it too. And I just was like, whoa.
Mm.
Whoa. And then so right after that, the floodgates opened and I told her everything and it felt like I could actually be myself for once because I didn't have to worry about would she still love me. She understood why I was doing it. She's like, you were doing it because you wanted and needed release, right? And I was like, yep. And so when we had that discussion as mother and son, it really transformed our relationship and it made me be like, well, fuck, I'm not afraid to tell anybody this. So then the next day we went on BBC World News and did a whole story about it together. Oh, and it just felt like it was just so amazing because my mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do. And it just felt like if somebody else can hear that and realize that they too can work with a sex worker and have their needs met and be, and again, have agency over their sex life, I'm so proud if my experiences can help somebody see that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got to take another break. I just love that story about your mom. And also, some moms could be super cool and still not go on BBC. So that was like an extra. She sounds very extra.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a break. when we come back, we're going to talk more with Andrew Gerza, who clearly isn't afraid to tell us anything. So stay with us.
Low libido, a waning sex drive, trouble with arousal, trouble with orgasm. I don't know how many times we've talked about these issues on the show, and it's because they're really common, especially for women. How to deal with these issues? It's complicated, which is why when they tried to create a Viagra for women, it didn't work. And as I've gotten older, my own desire and arousal process has changed dramatically. I've tried my fair share of these so-called arousal gels, and I never know what the big deal is. Omax sent me their O-Shot CBD arousal oil to try out. It contains 8 natural botanicals and full-spectrum CBD. I put a few pumps of it onto the external part of the clitoris and labia, and immediately I felt a kind of tingling sensation, which lasted for about an hour. But beyond tingling, it can increase stimulation, circulation, arousal, and lubrication. We know that CBD increases relaxation, blood flow, and euphoric sensations, and that in turn can increase your arousal and orgasmic response. Omax Health is offering my listeners 20% off O-Shot plus free shipping. This discount applies to any product site-wide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today. Enter code Tristan20 to take advantage. This is omaxhealth.com. Enter code Tristan20 to get 20% off.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking today with Andrew Gerza, who created the viral hashtag Disabled People Are Hot, and who's the host of his own podcast, Disability After Dark. One of the things that struck me recently on your social media is, well, quite frankly, it was kind of like a daily reality check about the lives of disabled folks. You shared on Twitter this experience you had with personal healthcare workers from the March of Dimes.
Yep.
Lots of people really rallied around you. I'm wondering if you can just, if you can give us a piece of like what happened, and then I want to know where things stand now.
Yeah. The story is this. I was working with a care worker who is also the scheduler where I live. And they were getting me up one morning, and they told me that the next day I couldn't shower because they were short-staffed. I told this person that I was had a work thing that day, and I needed to shower. So could we please figure it out? They said, no, no, this is what the rules are. We can't do that. And I said, oh, fuck, man, you're fucking it up for me, like just like that off the cuff. Mm-hmm. They then proceeded to take me out of the shower.
Right, so they were bathing you when this happened.
Yeah. They were just about to start bathing me, so I was naked in my commode chair. They wheeled the commode chair into my bedroom, put me in my bed without my consent, and left me there naked for 2 hours until I apologized to this person for saying the word fuck because it offended him in some way. So I was left there for 2 hours.
But you didn't say you fucking fuck. That's a different...
No.
You know what I mean? Like you didn't insult the person directly. You just said, oh, that fucks things up.
Yeah. I said, you're fucking shit up for me, man. Like just kind of off the cuff. And so I was left there. March of Dimes has since launched their own investigation to see what happened. I'm hopeful something is going to happen. But I mean, the larger thing is this kind of abuse happens to disabled people all the time. Disabled people are abused and assaulted in these homes where they live when what should be happening is that they have agency over their lives and what they want, what they say and who they have in their homes and who works for them and how they're cared for. And this does not happen on a daily basis to disabled people. They are put in supportive housing homes where the staff are hired through an agency and they have to put up with whoever comes in their home. And that is really the crux of what I'm trying to change, to give disabled people more agency so that this doesn't happen again.
I mean, it feels like if you went to work one day and the boss said, hey, no one can eat lunch today. Just no one can eat their lunch.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I mean, this is like, these are basic human needs. It's not a request that's out of line. It's totally within the bounds of what they do. And it seems inhumane.
I mean, in this instance, it was. And so having to have March of Dimes investigate themselves, they're like, oh, we're launching an investigation. And I just laughed and I said, so wait, you're investigating yourself? Does anyone see how that's a problem? So I'm following their process to let them do their investigation and see what comes of it. But I've told them, I was like, if you work with me in the right way and I can help you fix these problems. But if you choose to go against what I'm suggesting, I'll fight you. I have, like, look at this. I'm a media person. All I have to do is say what happened and somebody will rally behind me. And I told them
right. And they don't want the bad press.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is a tool. It's a tool to get people to do the right thing when they don't fucking do the right thing in the first place.
Exactly. See, can you imagine if you said fucking like you did just now and somebody was like, oh, that's, you can't have said that. So we're going to just stop the show. Like, no, that's not how that works.
Right. And I feel like, though, they're obviously everyone's stressed and overworked and all the things. But I feel like to deny someone these basic needs seems completely out of the realm of, you know, it just seems like it should be against policy or something.
Well, the ironic thing is that they had nothing in their policy about they had nothing in their policy about whether or not I could swear. They had nothing in their policy about the amount of force that an attendant is supposed to use. So yesterday in our meeting, because I had a meeting with them yesterday to figure all this out, I called them on these things and said, until these things are explicitly written in your policies that I am required to sign to live here, you need to really rethink these and come back to me. So at this point, I'm waiting for them to make a decision on, to talk to the other party involved and make a decision on what they're going to do. But I said, like, until you come up with something where this is in the policy, you can't have somebody who arbitrarily decides to enforce these rules and confine somebody to a bed because they feel bad. That's not right.
Well, yeah. Also, the sort of punishment piece of the story is really fucked up and problematic.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because you don't have the ability to, like, walk out of the room or say, I don't want to be in bed, or dress yourself like that. I mean, it just seems, again, it seems like torture.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, for those 2 hours that I was stuck in there, it was. I couldn't help myself. When I'm on my back, one of my favorite sexual positions, to bring it back to sex for a minute, one of my favorite sexual positions is the dead turtle position, because I'm on my back and I can't move. So I was stuck in dead turtle for 2 hours, unable to move. So imagine, just from a safety standpoint, how unsafe that is for somebody who cannot help themselves. And out of anger, this person decided it was okay to leave me there.
Right.
So, I mean, it just, the more and more I retell the story, how ridiculous it is, but also how ridiculous that an organization like March of Dimes Canada, hey, if you're listening, I hope you're listening, like March of Dimes Canada, to allow for that to go on.
People can read about this on Andrew's Twitter, and I'm assuming people are free to write to the March of Dimes or tweet at them about this.
Oh, please do. March of Dimes CBA, okay. And
good.
Just say no, because I mean, I'm in talks with them right now, so they'll probably tweet back something like, we're working with Mr. Gerza to fix the problem. But the more heat they have on them, the better. So please bring it on.
Yeah. So another thing that you're doing that I saw is there is a GoFundMe to raise money for sex toy and disability research. I want to know about that project.
It's happening. You and I spoke 3 years ago about a little brand that I started then called Deliciously Disabled.
Mm-hmm.
It's change management. Now it's myself and my sister, and we're using that name to create the first line of sex toys for and by disabled people. So, because right now there are no toys on the market specifically designed for and by disabled people, much less there's not a line of toys for mm-hmm. disabled people. So we are trying to create the first line of sex toys for and by disabled people. And we, to get this research, to get this done, we're working with the RMIT team out of Melbourne, Australia. Some really great people there. Judith Glover is leading the design team to help us come up with a toy or a prototype for a toy that we can take to market. And so what we're asking for right now, we need about $12,000 for the research just to get our research done, because we don't want to create a toy that we find that somebody can't use. So we are working with myself as a tester and somebody in Australia as a tester to find out how current sex toys for people with limited hand mobility, because that's what we're working with right now.
Mm-hmm.
People who have limited hand mobility and limited dexterity, because a lot of people with disabilities have different hand mobility and dexterity. So we're trying to create we're trying to look at how people use masturbatory aids to get off. And we're realizing that so many toys people with limited hand function can't use. So we're trying to create a toy that you can use by yourself without having to call your attendant, without having to hire a sex worker. If you just want to sit at home and get off, you can do it with whatever this toy becomes. And so I'm really excited that my sister and I are working on this together, because it's not your typical family project, but but it's something that I'm really proud we're doing together.
That's amazing. Okay, and people can support that on the GoFundMe. Let's take another commercial break. You guys, this is the last commercial break, so I know you can hang in there with us. And we're going to talk about Andrew's podcast when we get back.
It's July, which means it is the one and only sale of the year at the Pleasure Chest, in store and online. It's BOGO. Buy one, get one half off anything that vibrates of equal or lesser value. Have your eye on a luxury vibe. These things do not go on sale, people. Maybe you want to try a vibrating butt plug. Maybe your magic wand is about to kind of kick it. Not to worry. BOGO is the perfect time to restock or upgrade your toolbox. You need to invest in pleasure for yourself, for a lover, for a friend, for a partner, or really just to treat yourself. This sale goes on for the entire month of July. It excludes Crave and Pleasure Chest kits. It's not available to combine with any other offers or promotions. Visit pleasurechest.com and get your vibe on. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, the Pleasure Chest, in addition to its BOGO July sale, buy one, get one half off for all vibrating toys. They have a bunch of great sex ed events in their stores, and they're all free. They're from 8 to 10 p.m., unless otherwise said. Let me tell you what's coming up in New York City, July 10th, Holy Trinity Threesomes. In Chicago, July 10th, Blowjobs and Beyond. In Los Angeles, July 7th, Intimate Partner Yoga. And July 10th, Negotiation to Impact, Creating Meaningful DS Dynamics, Part 2. You can go to pleasurechest.com, click on events, check all of that out. I'm talking today with Andrew Gerza, and he also has a podcast, which I will be a guest on very soon. It's called Disability After Dark. And one of the things that I love you that you do is on social media, you often take polls like, hey, if I did a show about this, would you listen to it? Yep. So it's like super interactive. So I'm wondering, now that you've done a bunch, is there someone you want to have on your show that you haven't yet? Or is there a conversation or a topic you're really itching to discuss?
I'm actually looking to move the podcast out of just sex all the time, because I'm sure with your show too, you know how hard it is to always like, oh, what are we going to talk about this week? How are we going to do it? Like, oh no, how do we do this? So I really want to move it not to just be a sex podcast. What I'm learning the more and more I do it is that it's a sex and disability podcast, which means that I can have topics about disability that have nothing to do with sex, but it can still be under that brand. So I'm excited for that.
Well, and the title works too, because it's Disability After Dark, which I see the sort of sexual connotation, but it also feels like this is what we really talk about when the lights go out. Or yes. It also has like a sort of a connotation of like real talk, not kind of whitewashed or happy, pretty, dressed up for the public. So yes. I think it totally works.
And I mean, over the last 2.5 years of doing it, I really tried to stick just to sex, because I was like, that's my brand. I have to do that. But the more and more I do it, I'm like, I want to talk about this, but I don't want to have to start a whole new podcast for it. So why don't we just...
if you've built the audience, you don't want to then make them all go to a different place.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to find ways to expand it. In terms of guests I want to have, I mean, I'm excited for your episode. That'll be fun.
That's sweet. What about a conversation or a topic that you haven't yet covered that you're like, oh God, I can't wait to do a show about this?
I want to talk to more people who are asexual and disabled, because there's a myth that all disabled people must be asexual because they're disabled. What if you are asexual and disabled and that's just what it is?
And you're consciously, you've chosen this as an identity. Right, yeah. We've seen the asexual folks come out, more visibility, more education. So you're saying like there are people who are disabled and asexual by default or of, you know, for various reasons. But what if you claim that identity alongside your disability?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember I had somebody a couple of years ago at a talk I was giving. She rolled up to me in a wheelchair and she goes, "Your talk is great, but I think I'm asexual." And I went, oh, cool. And I had no like way of providing her with like any kind of thing to make her feel better, because I was like, I don't know how to, I really, I also want that for my work to broaden what I do, because I think that disability can hit on all the spectrums. And so I think that if anybody out there listening who is asexual, come on my show. I'd love to talk with you.
That's great. See, audience, action plan. You were also honored. Did you go hang out with some gay celebrities recently?
I did.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. I was honored by Queer Tea, which is a gay male specifically, I think, online magazine. And they honored me as part of their Pride 50 event for Stonewall, and so they had a big party in New York, and they told me a few months ago that they were honoring me, and I thought, oh, they'll do a spread in their magazine with a picture of me, and that'll be nice. And then I get an email invite to this party where people on the list like Elton John, Lizzo, Ellen Page, and my name, and I was like, okay, this is like a big deal. And then I realized they were having a party in New York, and I was like, well, maybe I'll go. And so I crowdfunded some money, got some money from awesome people who support me, and I flew out there with my mom, and we had the best time, and I bumped into people like John Cameron Mitchell was there.
Oh, I love John Cameron Mitchell.
Yeah. We talked for a minute and gave each other a hug, and that was nice, and like I met some amazing people from Stonewall were there. The gay seniors were there. Mm. It was really powerful because I was also the only wheelchair user in the room.
You were?
Yeah, and that was to go on the red carpet and have like Getty Images take my picture on this like red carpet they made, and then mm-hmm. to realize that I was the only wheelchair user in the room at this event was like, that's important.
Yeah.
There's something really important about that. So, and I was also really proud to share that with my mom because I remember when I started this kind of being a consultant and doing it on my own and being a freelancer and figuring it out, my mom was really worried that I wouldn't be able to make money and that I wouldn't be able to support myself. And to be able to take her to New York and be like, look, I'm okay now. I'm in a room with like all these celebrities, drag queens from New York, all this, I'm in this room with them, being honored with them, like on the same list as Elton John. I'm okay now. So there was something really important about that.
Yeah. Well, it's just quite a milestone. And also just the visibility. Like you said, you're the only person in a wheelchair that year, you are, right? And so it's important for visibility.
Totally. And it was, I love being the only wheelchair user in a room sometimes because I'm like, yeah, I was there. I made sure to represent. I did. And that's there's power in that.
Absolutely, there's power in that. I love that. So what are you working on besides your podcast, which everyone has to listen to? Is there anything, and your fundraising for sex and disability research around the sex toy? Is there anything else that's coming up that you want to tell us about?
I'm trying to think. There's nothing super current right now. I mean, right now, today, I'm working on a play in Canada all about sex and disability. I'm workshopping it right now with a bunch of other queer disabled guys in Toronto. And we're putting together a workshop for next weekend. So, I mean, that's coming up. I want to write a book. So there's that.
And do you need special assistance to write a book? I have that question. The practicality of it.
I have the ability to type, so I don't need super special assistance. I just need somebody to be like, we want to publish your book. Here's a really nice big advance. Come tell us your story. So, any book people out there, I'm here for you.
I mean, Arsenal Pulp Press should be... which is a Canadian press and does a lot of really good
queer
literature, I think would be a really good fit.
Arsenal people, get at me, the Andrew Gerza. I'm here for you.
Call him. Okay, I want to tell everyone how to get a hold of you. Your website is andrewgerza.com. You're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the Andrew Gerza. Also, people can support you on Patreon. Your podcast is on Patreon, patreon.com/disabledafterdark. And they can find Disabled After Dark wherever they get podcasts.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Andrew.
Thank you for having me back again. This is so fun and I love this conversation. Thank you.
I want to thank everyone who makes the show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Hey, if you want to get me, I am at Tristan Taramino across all social media platforms. If you want to support the writing of my queer memoir, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. There's a lot of really cool perks for patrons, including getting handwritten notes from me, getting presents from me, and of course, getting shout outs, including shout outs on this show. So if you want me to shout out your name, your scene name, your handle, whatever, I will do that. patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. My guest will be Jay Pryor, who is talking about their one-person show, Gender Reveal Party. That should be fun. Until then, take some time to talk about sex and disability out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.